Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Mobile today in College Park, where Penn State plays Maryland tonight at 7. I'm beginning at 6:30 as Penn State resumes Big Ten play tonight with an 11-4 record, while Maryland comes in at 12-3. Justin Jackson out of tonight's game and out for the season. Labrum and Yvonne Bender out for the year. Meniscus that was suffered in the UMBC game. Penn State healthy, ready to go. That is tonight. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, finding the right insurance coverage for the best price for their customers, because the customer comes first. Auto, home, life, business, doesn't matter. They'll take care of all your insurance needs. And if there's a claim, they'll act as if it happened to them. They're your partner in all this. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, so let's get to the play-by-play call of the day. Let's go back to the Rose Bowl.
On the 27, it's second down and 12. We go Wild Dog with Sony. Nauta goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling. 25-20. Got a block for Brom. 50. 10. 5. Touchdown. 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 Dogs win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Scott Howard, who will have a short drive from his home to the championship stadium, seems to be excited about it on the Georgia Radio Network, as Sony Michelle scored his fourth touchdown of the day. Is third on the ground, and Georgia in double overtime wins it over Oklahoma 54-48. They will get Alabama for the title on Monday night. For Georgia fans, a great way to have it work out for them, because most fans now in the college playoff era, I think some of them, you know, because of expenses, you got to make a decision here. I mean, do I go to the semifinal? Do I roll the dice and buy my plane ticket to go to the final? What do I do? Well, Georgia never had to do that. Their fans could just go all in on going to the Rose Bowl, because if they lost, that's it. Okay, fine. And if they won, they're in Atlanta. It's a pretty good scenario. It's a really good scenario. All right. The NFL playoffs coming up. Playoff weekend, pretty good. Steelers are coming off a scintillating win over the Cleveland Browns. I'm sure you watched all of it, Sean.
I sure did.
Another big Landry Jones day. Okay, so let's bring in Neil Coulong, USA Today. Neil, happy New Year. Great to have you with us.
Happy New Year to you as well. Thanks for having me.
All right, Neil. Really exciting watching Landry Jones play. Do you get anything out of Sunday at all? Anything?
No, nothing at all. It was, I was pointing this out on social media during the game as well. They weren't even running the regular stuff. I mean, it was really a preseason game in a lot of ways. Even the guys they did play was kind of like, you're not really evaluating them for anything of what you're doing. It really seemed to be a game that they just wanted to get over with and move on. And turned out to be, you know, perhaps one of the more exciting games of the year, all things considered. But, yeah, just a really, really poor display of football on both sides of the ball. We saw some really bad things that hopefully we won't have to see again. And I think considering the Steelers only have to play Cleveland twice a year, we don't have to worry about it too much. We certainly won't see it anymore going forward.
Well, Mike Tomlin rested a lot of guys. So what were your thoughts just on, you know, you're going to have guys that are going to miss 2 weeks in the end because they sat out. Pluses and any minuses to that, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on it, because first off, from the negative perspective, you see a lot of teams that come out flat. They come out soft. You only have four quarters in a playoff game. You can't waste any of that. So the idea that they're going to need time to kind of work into what they're doing and kind of get their football legs back under them. That has to be a concern. And I know that every single coach is going to downplay that, but the reality is this is a rhythm-based game. You see it week to week. The teams that are in good rhythm, they're consistently doing the same things. Those are the ones that are performing at an optimal level. Teams that take 2 weeks off, it's probably not going to be the same thing. So for me, it's tough to say that they shouldn't get any rest at all, and you shouldn't bench them. You should play them at every opportunity that you can get to get them reps. But on the other side, Ben Roethlisberger is a veteran. He's a Hall of Fame player. He knows his body. If Mike Tomlin walked up to him and said, "Do you want to take this week off?" and he said, "You know what? It's probably best if I do." He knows himself. He knows what he needs to do to get himself ready. I would probably trust that. The amount of touches that Le'Veon Bell has had this year, I can definitely see why they'd want to give him a little bit of a break. Plus, as we've seen the last couple of years with the Steelers team, they've always been one running back short in the playoffs. It's happened every year. So the idea of having Le'Veon Bell as fresh as humanly possible without him breaking down in week 17, I get where they're coming from with that. But they, more than anything, they needed to get Stephen Ridley touches. I thought he looked really good. I was impressed with him, probably more than anybody else on the field. But getting him into some game conditioning shape, I think is probably important for them to do as well. And from there, it's like, all right, well, any other key guy, why are we playing them? If we're not going to play Ben and Bell, why play anybody else? So I see why they made the decision. I just really hope that isn't a terrible first half in the division round.
Yeah, I've always been mixed on that as well. I mean, I look at the Patriots don't sit guys. I mean, they don't do that, and they've had success. When the Giants beat the Patriots, each time the Giants had to fight their guts out at the end to do something. Remember that game was, it's 10 years ago now, but the Giants played that memorable game against the Patriots in the final game of the season. And the Patriots won the game, and they went 16-0. But the Giants fought them to the end, and they stayed in rhythm the rest of the way. And then I see what the Colts did for years with Tony Dungy, and he sat guys. And to this day, he's still firm that he made the right decision. But I just feel like I've watched teams stay in rhythm versus teams being flat. That's why I've always been mixed about it.
It's almost as if we're arguing – sitting guys versus not sitting guys is similar to sitting a rookie quarterback versus playing him right away. There's going to be examples of positives and negatives from both of that. I think it really comes down to your team. You look at Dallas last year, for example. They played a horrendous first half against Green Bay, and in the end, it was they weren't able to overcome that really slow start. And I, to my knowledge, I don't think they benched everybody in Week 17, but they did have a bye, and it's also a younger team. That was really their first taste of success that they had in a while. So from that end, you can understand where rhythm might be even more important. I would probably classify the Steelers, certainly on offense, as a more veteran-heavy team, and certainly the Patriots are the same way. So I get their thought process behind either one of them. But in the end, I think what it really comes down to is the fact that you have at least 1 week of rest, and you're playing a game at home against a good football team, a team that was good enough to win one playoff game this year. So you take whatever advantage you can, and you kind of have to cater your team toward, whatever that best and highest advantage is going to be. And I guess in Tomlin's case, he wanted him to rest. And I can see it, but either way, it's almost like damned if you do, damned if you don't.
What matchups this weekend intrigue you?
I think all of them do, to be honest with you. I know how cheesy that sounds. I was just looking over it. It's like, wow, I could see any one of these teams winning, with the exception of maybe not Tennessee at Kansas City, and that's assuming that we're going to get the Kansas City team we might have seen over the last couple weeks. In the Tennessee team, you're never really sure what you're getting with them, and you never really have been sure what you're getting with them. I thought they'd be a playoff team this year, but I thought they'd be a lot better than they were. I've seen them play just horrendously a couple times. I think Kansas City is the probably more of a clear favorite there. I'd like to see how Jacksonville comes out of the gate. This is going to be a hyper emotional game for them. They're a young team. They're a team with a lot to prove. New head coach, and they might have to some extent overachieved at times of the season. You're not really sure what you're going to get out of them, but that's a team I could see beating anybody in the AFC. So I'm more than anything, I'm probably watching them to see, where they are in terms of their preparation, how they're going to attack, and what really more than anything, perhaps what Blake Bortles is going to do in his first playoff start. We're in a year that Blake Bortles is starting a playoff game at home. I mean, crazy season. I definitely did not see that coming, but to me, I think they're kind of the team to watch early.
And then in the NFC, I think it's been pretty much assumed you're going to get really good matchups in the NFC anyway, and that's what they ended up getting, were really good matchups there.
Yeah, I mean, in any team in the NFC can beat anybody else. Certainly, right. with Carson Wentz out, I mean, the number one seed might be the weakest team. You know, I think Philadelphia is going to struggle to win a playoff game against anybody they play simply because Nick Foles is not a particularly good quarterback. That gives them probably the worst quarterback in the NFC playoff field. Knowing that, they get a week off to kind of look. You wonder how Cam Newton's going to respond. You know, what's he going to be able to do going up for a third time against a very good Saints team that's definitely overachieved this season? How is he going to respond after getting beat pretty badly last week? You know, he's kind of an up-and-down roller coaster type of guy, but certainly not the type of player that I think any defensive coordinator wants to have to scheme against in the playoffs. But putting him on the road against a very opportunistic Saints defense with a great ball control offense, to me, that's like a Super Bowl matchup. I just think it's a great comparison of strengths between two teams that know each other very well. I think that could be the best game of the weekend simply because of their familiarity with how Newton's going to come out and respond in this game. Putting all those things together, to me, I'm excited. I haven't been excited for a full weekend of football like this in a while. I think these playoffs are going to be great.
Yeah, like Baltimore-Cincinnati was a great game. There have been a lot of just really mediocre games this year, and there's been some great games mixed in. These at least have great matchups. You watch the Georgia-Oklahoma game. Now, look, it's not the same quality of player. We know that, right? But there are fewer penalties and greater flow to a game like that, and the NFL has to be somewhat jealous of watching something like that to add some juice and some flow.
Looking at it from that perspective, too, the one thing I would say the NFL, if they're going to be jealous about the college product, it's the amount of time that they get to build into these games. And you see it both in kind of a high-quality and no-quality perspective because these games are 54 to 48, but at the same time, you're seeing very inventive, creative types of things going on. I mean, Mayfield's touchdown catch, that play was phenomenal. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that pass coming. Yet at the same time, you watch in replay, it's exactly what he's setting up. It's just such a well-crafted play with such a well-executed play. You see stuff like that in bowl games all the time because they have so much more time to kind of scheme and prepare for it, while really the extra time that a college gets, especially playing in the lower bowls, what they're really doing is just getting more practice time with their players. It's not so much about winning the whatever .com bowl it is. It's the fact that they get that much more time. But with it, they can freshen things up. They can make it more creative, more inventive, and script plays that no defense possibly could be prepared to handle, and just kind of hope that one of those plays, or that the situation comes up where you can run one of those plays. And then you put it between, the four, maybe the four best teams in college football, put them all on display. I mean, it's fun. It's a blast to watch. And I'm not somebody that follows, from a team level, the college game all that much. I know players in draft preparation, everything like that, but watching them on the big stage, watching them all just, make highlight reel play after highlight reel play, it's a blast to watch just from a pure game perspective. You had to love the way Georgia was running the ball. You have to love, I guess maybe people don't, but Baker Mayfield, I think, is entertaining to watch. Just a crazy kind of nutty type of guy on the field. He's got this kind of Brett Favre swagger about him. It's enjoyable. And then to see him lose the way he did is almost even more fun just because he didn't see it coming. I had a great time watching that.
See, and I think now the NFL has that opportunity this weekend in terms of the excitement level, because you and I both know the quality of play and the quality of athletes the highest. It's between that and the college game, it's not even close. But the NFL is an opportunity to have that starting this weekend and have itself a big January, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I think, it's the year, you touched on this earlier, I think the year got off to a certain start and there was enough kind of a political cloud over it that people probably overreacted a bit to some of the few bad games that we saw earlier in the year, and that sort of permeated everything else. To me, down the stretch toward the end of the season, we saw a lot of phenomenal games. I mean, take out the call at the end. That Patriots-Steelers game was one of the best you're going to see.
Yeah,
I mean, period.
Yeah.
That was high-level football. The Steelers-Ravens game that we saw, that was, I don't think anybody saw that coming with 6 minutes to go. The Ravens-Bengals game, I hate to admit, I really kind of enjoyed the ending of that one as well. You had a lot of great, a lot of great play at a lot of different levels. It was obviously really, really difficult for the Ravens to get into the playoffs, although they were a shoe-in. Who thought Buffalo was going back to the playoffs this season? I don't think anybody thought that. I think there are enough storylines going into this playoff that you could have a lot of very memorable events. You've got a lot of great star power. You know, the Saints, I talked about them before, they're not just about Drew Brees anymore. You look at their running game, it's so explosive. It's so much fun to watch. It's old school football. They don't really do anything all that fancy. They just find a way to get two guys ball in space, and those guys are tearing everything up. You see a very high-powered Falcons offense kind of coming back into what we saw of them last year. To have a playoffs without the Packers is kind of strange. We don't see that a whole lot, anymore. Cowboys, Redskins, Giants, those guys aren't in the playoffs. You've got a lot of younger, newer, up-and-coming teams that I think can represent a very positive change in the NFL for people that really want to watch it and not, you know, get into the other stuff that's surrounding the sport. There's a lot to like in these playoffs, and I think we're going to see a lot of great stuff.
Neil, always appreciate it. Thanks.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Kulong joining us from USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment from College Park, Maryland, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
There are a lot of places to get insurance coverage, but only one place in the Susquehanna Valley ready to put four generations of experience to work for you. Hi, I'm Adam Purdy. At Purdy Insurance, we take the time to talk with you and find the right coverage for your needs. Everyone's situation is unique, so our approach is to customize coverage to best protect you. Whether it's home, auto, or business insurance solutions you need, call, email, or stop in to see how our commitment to personal service can help protect what matters to you.
Top of the hour, the suit stopped in to brag to Sean and me about his great bowl record. I don't know what that brings with it. That is four consecutive years, though, of brilliant prognostications. So we must give credit where credit is due.
We do that, yes.
Yes. Now, the part where we have to sit there and endure it, right? Not so pleasant.
No.
This is not what you call a gracious winner.
Mm-mm.
Do you think he wins with grace? Or does he have a tendency to rub it in your face?
Yeah, a little here and there, sure.
I mean, the billboard on Route 15? I mean, really?
Must have got some extra holiday cash. Didn't know what to do with it.
No, I know the job he does. I can't imagine that. Unless there was a lottery winning we don't know about.
That'd have been a scratch-off. Wasn't Mega Millions or Powerball, that's for sure.
That's right. That's exactly right. Oh, my goodness. So, tonight, basketball. A lot of heavy dose of basketball this week. Then we had a big playoff weekend. The playoffs are, you know what? Usually there's a couple of routes in the opening weekend, okay? I don't see it this time. I see good games. I think the NFL, like you said, what, eight new teams in the playoffs brings with it a level of unpredictability. And I think the matchups are actually pretty good. That's what I'm looking for, is the matchups. The matchups are good. I think you look at Carolina and New Orleans, good matchup. Atlanta and the Rams, good matchup. Titans and Chiefs, Bills and Jags, I think unpredictability.
I'm curious to see how Buffalo is going to do if they can hang with Jacksonville. So, but Blake Bortles is starting to play like Blake Bortles again here during the home stretch.
Well, I think the big matchup is going to be the Buffalo offense and the Jacksonville defense. Can the Jacksonville defense continue to play at a high level, or is there an opening there with LeSean McCoy and obviously a very careful Tyrod Taylor? Taylor is absolutely loved by analytics. I mean, just loved by analytics. And the reason is that he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. That's why analytics really go for him as a quarterback. He doesn't take a lot of chances. Now, having McCoy back there makes life a little bit easier. But remember, let's give Buffalo credit where credit's due. When the season began, everyone said they had the number one pick locked up, or it was going to be between them and Cleveland. They're in the playoffs. They won 9 games. Wow. Far from the number one pick. Many said they were in the Sam Darnold Bowl when the season started. Now they're going to Jacksonville. And for Jacksonville, I'm surprised the NFL's not making the move the game to London. What? Final half hour of the show coming up. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
From Learfield, this is Penn State Nittany Lion football.
Long and deep, far side, he goes to Hamilton. Inside the 10, cuts to the 5. Touchdown, Penn State! It'll be Barkley, 10, 15, far side, 20, 25, 30, to the 40, 50. Goodbye, he is gone! Saquon Barkley, 92 yards! Pressure, hit at the 5 by Givens, and down he goes at the 5-yard line. Delivers near corner. Hamilton reaches up in the end zone. He's got it. Touchdown, Penn State. And the Nittany Lions answer right back. Barkley hurdles for a first down inside the 25-yard line. Now that is a first down with style. The Nittany Lion football team, Fiesta Bowl champions, as they beat Washington 35-28.
The Penn State Nittany Lions, Fiesta Bowl champions. When you think sports, think News Radio 1070, WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070, WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It sounds like they won the game.
Sounds like a great call to me.
Well, you were talking earlier about the call on what Shane Simmons, I guess, for roughing the passer, and then the no call on Trace McSorley. And I told you, I told Jack during the commercial break, I said, it's a Big 12 crew. I said, they haven't seen defense all year. I said, how are they supposed to know?
Brought up on this show quite a bit, and I was thinking, this close he's going to bring that up.
I had no desire to bring. In fact, I think what Jack called out, I think they should go to Hamilton. They went to Hamilton, and I said, Jack Ham, great call.
Yes.
Right? That's about the only. It's about the only time where I think I strayed off the script. So, you know, I played it pretty straight on Saturday. Yeah.
A couple points that I thought of right after that roughing call that Penn State had. Then Chris Peterson gets into the bag of tricks and throws that little trickeration, gets the tight end with the catch down the 15. They eventually get that score.
Yeah.
That was definitely a swing point that I had red flag pretty early.
Yeah, Nick got caught on that. Nick Scott. He sees the ball go to Bocelli, and he's like, and you can see he takes like 2 steps up and then realizes, oh no, you know, Disley's behind me. And he tried to make up ground, and you know, that was the, you know, yeah, they knew they needed that play. Man, that's, you know, what Chris Peterson does. The pitch to the 33-yard line, the fumble, I mean, it's I really can't even begin to tell you what happened on that play. All I know is he shot across the line, and Bowman was there, and I think Bowman got to the ball about the same time Miles Sanders did. So that was a 33-yard drive. Gaskins' run, you always worry about, you know, a short yardage play, that if it's not stopped, you know, you block it, he's going to go all the way because everybody's up. And Gaskin went all the way on that one. And Browning, to Browning's credit, Browning made a really good throw to Fuller on the touchdown play. Really, that was a really good throw. Probably the best throw he made all day. But yeah, going into the game, I thought it was pretty blunt that I thought that McSorley was the better quarterback, that McSorley was the key guy in the game with his legs and his arm, and that he was a playmaker, and that I thought, you know, and I wasn't trying to be disrespectful, but that Browning was, like, I thought a step, maybe step and a half above a game manager, more in the vein of, ironically, the guy that was calling the game on TV, Greg McElroy. And then that's not putting anybody down. I mean, Greg McElroy got to the NFL, for goodness sakes, but that's how I looked at it. And that's after watching a lot of tape. And to be honest with you, Sean, all the game, I remember last year they started touting a year ago Jake Browning as a Heisman candidate. I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. But I hadn't had a chance to watch them on TV yet. So I deliberately, after a Penn State game, stayed up to watch one of the Pac-12 late-at-night games because Washington was going to play, and I finally had a chance to watch Browning. And, you know, he threw 43 touchdown passes a year ago, 43 of them. This year he threw, what, 19? And so I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking, I don't see it. So I thought, well, maybe I just saw a bad game. So then I watched Washington play again, and the same thing. I'm like, I don't see it. And then I watched the Pac-12 championship game the night before the Big Ten championship game last year, and again, the same thing. I walked away and said, I don't see it. And then, of course, against Alabama, I mean, it was Alabama. Nobody could see it. And I thought, I don't see what everybody was saying out there. And, you know, then I watched a lot of tape of him this year, and he was good, and he was efficient. He stayed away from the big mistake, but he just kind of felt like he didn't do things that he wasn't the big reason why they were winning games. Trace McSorley is a big reason why Penn State wins. It's a big reason why. I mean, he's a heck of a college quarterback.
On Vita Veda, everything is advertised, and boy, he made a terrific play on special teams.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he's really good, but you know what? Penn State blocked him pretty well, I thought. Well, that Penn State blocked him pretty well on Saturday. They really kept his statistical participation to a minimum, I thought, in the game. He was not as dominant a force as I think he could have been up front, because I think Penn State's offensive line played really well. I think it's one of the better offensive line performances we've seen by Penn State.
I think so, too, yeah. I mean, we're getting a lot of putting a lot of praise on Saquon, and, of course, Trace, rightfully so, especially Trace. But, yeah, I think that's the one thing. I think that's the one thing that's, if you could say something that could be hidden in the game recap, is just the terrific play of the O-line, for sure.
But the offensive line played well. I mean, Trace had a lot of time. He got sacked once in the game. And you don't go 12 for 12 on third down like he did. He was 12 of 12 passing on third down for 193 yards.
I was going to ask you the last time you saw that great of passing efficiency from any Penn State quarterback on third down.
Well, the 94 team was hardly ever at third down.
Boom! That was in the defense, like, hey, can you hang out there for a few more minutes? You know, we're just catching our breath.
And, you know, but he was 12 of 12 passing on third down for 193 yards. Washington had given up one play all season of 40 yards. One. Penn State had two in the game. The 48-yard touchdown pass to Hamilton and obviously the 92-yard run by Barkley. But when they needed to do something where they didn't score on either drive, but in the fourth quarter, they put together those two 13-play drives where I just really liked the play calling of rookie Ronnie. You really like the execution of what you're seeing, and they took time. They took between the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter. Those two drives took 11, 12 minutes off the clock. And I just liked what I saw, and if they had a chance at that 4th-and-1, and again, Washington was barking out signals. See, that was, you know, again, there's certain things you can pick up when you talk a little bit later with coaches and so forth. And that's what happened. They were barking out signals, which you're not supposed to do. Remember Penn State's complaint a year ago about Pitt? Well, Washington was doing the same thing. And Penn State kept complaining to the officials. And, again, it's a Big 12 crew, so whatever the defense was doing, they were unaware of. What? Who? We don't watch offensive players. And that's why man jumped. Okay. So, you know, they missed the field goal.
He definitely jumped, but it wasn't much.
It was because Washington was yelling and jumping at the same time, trying to actually draw him into that, and they did. Which it should have actually been a penalty on Washington. They should have been warned for it, but it doesn't matter. Penn State won the game. As Dick Girardi said, most lopsided 7-point win I've ever seen. I agree with it. You watch the game. I mean, Penn State wasn't a little bit better than Washington. Look, let's start with this. Washington's a very good team. They are a very good team. That's what makes this win impressive. Because against a very good team, Penn State played really well and dominated the game. Against a very good team, they played well and they dominated the game.
I got to thinking about last summer when you were saying first summer session, you had mentioned 80 players were still on campus. And yeah. You could tell the cohesion. I mean, James just doesn't throw out the word family just because he wants to. I mean, it's true. It's absolutely true. And the further down the line we got through the season, that really played a part. I mean, look at the final game that Deshaun Hamilton had. Wonderful couple touchdown grabs. And what can we say about the terrific storybook ending that Brandon Smith had?
Well, Brandon Smith played really well on Saturday. I thought that he might get defensive player of the game. They gave it to Marcus Allen, and that's perfectly fine because Marcus played really, really well again. But every time Jack Ham and I turned around, we saw Brandon Smith making a play here, making a play there. And, of course, he ends up with the ball in his hands at the end when Dante Pettis tried to lateral the ball and Brandon stepped in and he caught it. And he was funny with us in the post game because Jack asked him, what? He says, how big were your eyes when you saw the ball coming at you? He says, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, but again, he's in the right spot. And they had Pettis pinned. I mean, Pettis was going no further than where he went. That's why he lateraled the ball back. Now, should he have gone out of bounds? Yeah, but he lost track of the clock. And you're going to lose track of the clock when you're trying to run around in a situation like that. You're not going to have your eye on the clock while trying to make a lateral play, trying to do the Cal Stanford play. This is not going to happen, all right? So when you're lateraling the ball around like Cal did against Stanford, you're not sitting there looking at the clock because this was their last ditch. So he turned, he threw it, and Brandon Smith, as usual, in the right spot, caught it and essentially ended the game.
I wasn't thinking of the laterals in the 82 Stanford-Cal game. I was thinking of the laterals that ended that Penn State-Purdue game, which you clearly described several years back. Okay, how many more laterals do we have to get to match that?
I wasn't really thinking about that. I was thinking can they win the game.
You were in the moment.
it was a win for past, present, future. Past, and it's not past what I think people would be thinking. You know, they're 7-0 in the Fiesta Bowl and so far. No. Past, to me, means the journey James Franklin started at Penn State. He take over a program with 65 scholarships. When he took over, they were told they were not going to be in a bowl game for a couple more years. So he still recruited Grant Haley and Marcus Allen and Jason Kabinda and Mike Gesicki and Saeed Blacknall and Trace McSorley and guys like that. I mean, they were all in that first recruiting class. And then they went about their business. And remember, right before the third game of the 2014 season, they found out they could go to a bowl game. I mean, and so they actually started the season still thinking they couldn't go. And, you know, then they won the Pinstripe Bowl and they finished 7-6. And then in 15, they went 7-6. And a lot of the same Georgia guys that you saw in yesterday's game, Sanders and Carter, Sony Michel, Godwin, all played in that Tax Slayer Bowl against Penn State that they survived and beat Penn State 24-17. And then last year, then everything took off, which then brings us to present. And winning 20 of your last 23, and in those 20, you have beaten Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa twice, Northwestern, Wisconsin, and Washington. That's pretty good for 40% of your wins being against a group of teams like that when you've won 20 out of 23. Which then brings us to future. You've got one of the top college quarterbacks in the country coming back next year in Trace McSorley. You have a guy like Miles Sanders who has great potential, and Juwan Johnson and Tompkins to go with young guys like Hamler and Hippenhammer and bringing in Shorter and Dotson and guys like that. You've got something going there. And an offensive line with Fries and Bates and Gonzalez and Mennett and McGovern and Thorpe and Des Holmes, Mike Miranda. Yeah, you know, you got some pretty good football players there. The same thing, and we can go through all the defense too. I mean, the defense, this is one of the few teams in the country where you lose every guy in the secondary that started. Haley, Campbell, Apke, Allen. All four really, really good players. Really good. But you feel fine back there because you've got Castro Fields, Lamont Wade, Zach McPherson, John Reed comes back, Amani Oruwariye, Nick Scott, Aaron Monroe, Garrett Taylor. I mean, you're okay back there. The Sutherland kid, I think, has a chance to play too back there. He redshirted this year. So that's past, present, and future that you have. Because now, when you win a game like this, a New Year's Six game, it really is a capper to your 17 season. It's a capper to the careers of the seniors who invested so much and all took a chance on Penn State at a very tough time, who deserved to have an ending like that. But it also is a jump start into 18 and 19 for you, because it's going to throw more juice and energy into your off-season workouts, because you walked out of there pretty darn good about your football team, and you walked out of there probably as individuals feeling pretty darn good about themselves, and now you want more. And for some of them, they're going to get a real opportunity to go after more, because now they're going to have even bigger roles to do it, which then also stokes the flames. All right, we'll come back from College Park, wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, wrapping it up here from College Park, Penn State, Maryland tonight. Maryland, good team. Kevin Herter, really good shooter. Anthony Cowan's really come out as a point guard. Bruno Francisco has also been a big plus for them in the middle, along with Michael Chepkoski, and they bring Jared Nickens off the bench, at least they have. And Morsel, out of Baltimore Catholic League, has played really well, but they've been hit by injuries. Jackson's out, labrum. Bender's out, meniscus. Neither one will play tonight. In fact, neither one will play the rest of the season. But they have a little more depth than that. They can still bring Chekovsky off the bench, who's very good. But Penn State's more athletic than they are. If they can play smart, which they absolutely have the ability to, I know that Maryland's a 5-point favorite in this. I think Penn State can win by 5-7 tonight.
Bucknell gave Maryland all they could handle when they matched up with him about a month ago.
Yeah, Bucknell led by 15 in that game, and Maryland came back and won it by two which was a big boost for them at the time. Maryland's a little bit different team, though, than when they played Bucknell. I'll say this, Herter is a heck of a player. He can just flat-out shoot. And great stroke from the outside. So they'll have to contend with that. Maryland's a great rebounding team. Not good, they're great. They're like a plus +9 on the boards per game.
Speaking of Bucknell,
good job there.
Speaking of Bucknell, they're home tonight with Boston U. We'll have that on Eagle 107 tonight, beginning at 6:30 with Doug and the coach.
Very good. And to get Doug on there. And
yep. So both on the app tonight. Yeah. So yeah, you can check out Bucknell on the Eagle portion of our app, and of course, you and DJ on the WKOK portion of our Sunbury broadcast.
Doug said something to me about, you know, transitioning to basketball, and he said, "Now I feel free." I didn't know what that meant. All right, so yeah.
I don't either. I'm missing
I'm
something.
I'm confused.
I am too.
Evidently, Doug's not missing something. No, I'm just kidding. Donnie Collins on the show tomorrow. Looking forward to talking to him from the Scranton Times-Tribune. He was out there for the Fiesta Bowl. And we'll talk to him about that and about the national championship as well. Coming up on Monday night, an all-SEC title game, Georgia and Alabama, who did not play in the regular season and, despite being in the same conference, have rarely played against each other over the years. I mean, Vince Dooley and Bear Bryant, I mean, I think they only coached against each other. All the years they're out there, I think they only coached against each other like, I don't know, 7 or 8 times ever. They were there forever. It's like, really? That's it? Oh, he barely looked over and goes, "That's pretty good. I don't want to play him." So he called the conference commissioner and made sure they didn't play. All right. Did I ever tell you about Joe talking on the phone with Bear Bryant? Did I ever tell you that story?
I'd love to hear it.
He says that Secretary Carroll at the time says to him, Coach Bryant's on the phone for you. And Joe said, every time he called, I always shut the door and I put one finger in an ear and I put it up as close to my other ear as possible to figure out what he was saying. I'm telling you right now, I beat Auburn. What? Auburn, that doggone cow college. He called Auburn a cow college all the time. All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hobbles Wharf.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.